Welcome back to What Kind of Asian Are You podcast, a podcast featuring conversations about being Asian. We are here to inspire and motivate Asian from the diaspora to be their best selves. I'm your host, Kyle. On today's episode, we have TJ Wei. Z is an entrepreneur and host of a podcast called The Asian Detox Podcast. Our conversation will cover what TJ does and TJ's podcast. Our conversation touches on topics of being and growing up Asian American, immigrant mindset mentality, hustle culture, and reevaluating your mindset on what is the right way to live and start being and living your most authentic self as usual. Follow and subscribe to the podcast everywhere you can find us on. Listen and share our episodes. Give us a 5-star rating and review the podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you have spare change, buy us a coffee. All of these can be found in our description. Again, thank you for listening and your support. And now to the episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of What Kind of Asian Are You podcast. I am your host, Kyle. And today, my guest here is TJ Wei from the Asian Detox podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
So for the audience that doesn't know you yet, okay, just let them know who you are, what you're about, and most importantly, what kind of Asian are you?
So the default spiel is I'm your hashtag very Asian, non-binary, gluten and dairy free money habits coach. I also work as an IT project manager, program manager, organizational change manager in the corporate space, and I host the Asian Detox podcast.
That's awesome. Well, you mentioned a whole lot of different things that you're about. I like how you mentioned hashtag very Asian. Let's talk about it for you specifically.
I definitely cannot say that, like, since birth I felt that way, right? There's two aspects to it, because the hashtag very Asian specifically started with Michelle Lee TV, who was more about, like, she's an adopted Korean. So she actually wasn't in touch with her roots, but there was an incident that spawned this hashtag. And the idea is that, like, no matter do you speak the language of your people, or however you want to phrase that, right? Or whether or not you're embedded in the Asian community, or if you, like, cook all the traditional foods, like, it's not about whether or not you do 100% of those things to make you very Asian. It's that you're proud of being Asian, and you pick and choose the parts that you're proud of, and you exhibit those. And there's not a version of being Asian that is not enough or not Asian enough. So for me, I grew up in the California Bay Area, where my high school was 80% Asian. So there was a lot of, like, being Asian is normal, or things you did, like, you never occurred to you that that was specifically an Asian behavior. But then I moved away and I ended up in Arizona, ended up in, like, a corporate life with predominantly white coworkers. I did have a few Asian coworkers, but somewhere in that process of, like, trying to become a business person and trying to be successful and fit some kind of stereotype, I was starting to, like, suppress the parts of me that made me unique, of, like, being Asian or being non-binary. And that's a fairly recent thing too, but that's just the journey I went through in my late teens and 20s, is kind of like this neutralization of who I was. Like, all I was there to do was execute tasks, like, get something completed. And other things might be, like, I'm a great communicator and I relate to people really well, things like that. But, like, after stepping away from the corporate world, at least the traditional, like, I work for somebody else world, I've gained a lot of freedom in, like, the way I dress or the way I see myself. And that is, I think, very typical to go from, like, trying to leave your culture behind a little bit in your 20s and trying to be something different. And then in your 30s, you're like, wait a second, I don't want to, like, find out after my parents pass away that, like, that comfort food that they cooked for me, I don't know how to cook, right? I would like to go home and be like, Mom, can you teach me how to do this? Because I don't want that to disappear from my life. And that's why explicitly saying that I'm hashtag very Asian is so important to me.
I love that. And I really relate to your part of, like, where I grew up, where, you know, school and such, where majority of us were Asian, actually, at least in my high school. And then, like you, I also moved to an area for university where most of the people there are white. And, like, if it wasn't for, it's a university town, so if it wasn't for the university, the diversity would not be there either. It would be mostly just white people.
And I could definitely relate to the aspect of like, oh, I'm just there to do a task. I'm just there to be like a number, essentially. You don't have any character because your character will live through you being the fact that you're Asian. So, and then if you're trying to fit in or whatever, there is a certain aspect where you just kind of like suppress. So I was wondering, what in your 20s do you feel like you really suppressed in order to feel like, oh, I can fit in, or I just be one of them, or I could make it easier for me to like kind of go through this corporate world? Because you mentioned like suppressing. What specifically do you feel like you did at that point where it's like, oh, if I look back now, it's like, well, it's so silly, or like, why did I even do that in terms of suppressing? Because it wouldn't be an issue now. Like, I'm proud to do those kind of things or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I don't have too many examples, because to me, there's like a piece where going through my corporate life was still very aligned with what would be called the, like, I call the Asian parent approved path of like, one of the like the three careers that my mom listed for me was CEO. So like being in the business world, I was still following what my parents would approve of. And then of course I was in tech too. So then you get like the Asian is nerdy and smart or whatever. Those all kind of lined up. So from a concept of feeling like I had to act a certain way, it wasn't very obvious because to a certain extent, I was still following what was expected of me without deviating from being Asian. But there are definitely incidents where for Chinese New Year's, I occasionally go into work in a qipao, and like it's so surprising to my coworkers that I show up in my traditional clothes that I'm just like weirded out by that. And like it forces me to think like, oh, wait, like, why do I only do this for Chinese New Year's? Like, I like these clothes. Why don't I wear them more often? And especially to the point of like, I went to a convention, like an anime convention. And on the last day of any 3-day convention, I'm tired of dressing up in cosplay. So then I wear one of my Asian traditional outfits. And they had a separate line at this convention for cosplayers, because cosplay costumes can have a lot of things that don't go through security very well, like the typical metal detectors. And I was just wearing, again, a qipao, and the security person directed me to the cosplay line, and I was like, bitch, this is just a dress. Like, this is just clothing. Like, this is not a costume. And to me, like, this is one of the driving factors of reaching out to be on other people's podcasts as well as having my own, is that, like, there's not enough visibility or exposure to our culture for other people to be able to accept us when we are like outwardly Asian. And I personally don't have that like that Asian privacy compulsion. Like, I know that society, like, and my mom will always be like, keep it in the family, don't tell anyone anything embarrassing, those types of things. But that's not the core of who I am. I'm an extremely transparent person. I like to be as authentic as I'm comfortable with in whatever situation I'm in. And knowing that that's not the case for some of my peers, I actively seek opportunities to use my voice to represent, because we need that.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a lot of things that we have to not necessarily change. It would be just rewiring of how we see things. I think we always have that kind of mindset of announcing it, but the fact that we were wired to be like, you shouldn't do it, or however way it is. And I think it's important, especially now, to work on that specific, not necessarily to a great extent where, oh, you change yourself entirely. I think taking small steps along the way at whatever you want to get done, or whatever, however way you want to live authentically to yourself, I think that's more important, to be like, oh, I'm going to do a 360 transformation or anything like that. I don't think that could work for you, but at the same time, it's not needed. I think everyone has their own journey. Everyone has their own way of showing how they are as a person, being very Asian in however way they want. I think that's been a difficult thing to kind of push through, because I think in the kind of way we're trying to go for, oh, Asian representation, or, you know, anything to like elevate our community or to platform our community, it's always like, we got to show like we're the most Asian, the way that the people can see us, so that they see, oh, Asian is a thing, it's here to stay or whatever. But I think there should be a point where we get to a stage where you're on a spectrum of how Asian you are, and that's fine. I think we're working towards that, but there's still so much things that conflict with that just because of the fact that how we see Asianness, who can be Asian, the gatekeeping and all that stuff come into play as well. And I think at least that's how I feel what you're trying to do overall with your kind of podcast, your kind of the energy that you put out. I think you're trying to actively do your part in terms of changing that narrative. And I really appreciate you for doing that. And talking about all these kind of like being Asian and all that stuff. And you already mentioned how, oh, you grew up where like everyone around you was Asian. So you never felt like necessarily like, oh, I was different or anything like that. But you mentioned the point of like, oh, the Asian parent approved path and all that stuff. A lot of people, I'm sure, have gone through that and to various degree, either, you know, accepted that path, are part of that path, rejected it, or like had really bad experiences with it or what have you. Can you just talk about your experience with that, going through that path? Because you did go end up doing all that stuff, but at what, that's, I don't want to say at what cost, but like what would be like your overall kind of takeaway from doing that and your thoughts on it as a whole?
Yeah. So to me, like, there's a lot of stereotypical aspects to the Asian parent approved path. It's typically that, like, maybe your parents want you to marry another Asian of your ethnicity, or they give you, it's typically a list of three potential careers, right? The ones that, whatever it is for your, like, I view it as like your immigrant group, because typically they, you, when you're an immigrant, you go live somewhere where there's other immigrants from the same region that you're from, so that you have some, like, you share a language, you share culture, all of those things. So it's not always the same list for everybody, but it's the list of like careers that they have been assured will keep you financially stable, make you successful, gain you a lot of respect. And depending on your culture, that might be opening a sushi shop, like, or a nail salon, or is to be a lawyer, a doctor, an engineer. It just depends on where your own family came from and what their community is telling them. Like, we know how to do this. We can give you the blueprint on how to get there. And that's what they want for their children, is stability, because the act of being an immigrant is unstable. So... for me, like, a few of the stipulations, right? My mom, she wanted me to marry Chinese. And then at some point, like, this was, I swear, I was like 9 and then maybe 12. She changed her mind. Like, I don't remember the actual ages, right? But a couple years later, she's like, you know what? Changed my mind. You can marry whoever you want because I just want you to be happy. So, like, I can't say that, like, my mom's a tiger mom. But, like, the career path, it really was doctor, lawyer, engineer. And then... as I got closer to college, I started rejecting the idea of having like 6 advanced placement classes in high school. And at my high school, most of our advanced placement classes were in the STEM field. So Calculus 3 or AP Biology, all of those things, which I still had an interest in, but I didn't like math. And I'd gone to a bunch of nerd camps where I actually did like, I ended up taking biology like 3 years in a row because I took it during the summer as well as like between junior high and high school, to the point that I got sick of it. So there was a part of me that was like, I don't need to compete with all of my peers in the advanced placement classes and be just like them. I also enjoyed reading. So we ended up having, we had the hardest advanced placement class, at least in the opinion of my high school, is AP US History. Which is like how to condense 200 years of history all into really, I think it's 7 months of schooling. And everybody would like, somehow that's like a super respectable thing to do, to deviate from STEM and to not go to calculus and volunteer to read. I don't know what that is, but like that was my like version of rebelling a little bit from not from my parents, but from the community of how they saw how to succeed. I still went to college. That's definitely Asian parent approved, like get higher education, all of that. But I landed in business school because of that aversion to STEM, and also fully knowing that if I wanted to change majors, I could, right? It was never too late. I went to Arizona State University. It's ginormous. It's not such a big deal. But when I went the business school route, my mom actually affirmed that for me. Like, it wasn't something where she was like, you should go to business school. But when I said, this is the path I think I want to take, she said, that'll probably suit you really well. And that definitely helped, like, because, you know, like, your parents have been watching you for 17, 18 years at that point. And either they've helped shape who you are, or they've just spent that much time with you to know, like, where you could thrive. And depending on how aware they are of the opportunities in the landscape of how stable a certain path might be, they may try to steer you away from what that is. And they definitely did that with my brother, because he ended up going to school for 3D art, like digital design art. And that was a long journey. Like, he didn't go to college until after I was halfway through my college, and he's 3 years older than I am. So it was difficult for my parents to wrap their heads around the concept of, like, their son isn't good at school. Their son has to take algebra 3 times. And he didn't apply to college. So when I applied to college, I was the first one, and they didn't know what the process looked like. They were so freaked out. But, like, I guess what I'm saying is I had elements that told me what the Asian parent or Asian parent approved path was. And it wasn't always my parents. Sometimes it was my classmates' parents, and they were, like, communicating that to me. And I'm surrounded by this culture of, like, oh, I stayed up until 4 a.m. to study for this test. And in a world where, like, your parents don't give you a curfew, because as long as you're studying, it's totally okay. So I was embedded in that culture, but I did have the benefit of having the skills to survive that culture, right? Of, like, those expectations that I did well in school, I could meet them. My brother couldn't. Or the, like, picking a career that fell into that list, that just happened to be, like, my natural inclination. That had, like, nothing to do with choosing whether or not to obey my parents. I will say that going to college in general was also kind of a form of rebellion, because how else was I going to leave my parents' house? I didn't have a job. So in order to leave and not have a ginormous rift in the family, I had to go to college. That was my escape. So because I had the tools available to me, I legitimately thought senior year, before I applied to college, I was like, this is my way out, is to go to college. And I think it was a big underline for me, because my brother didn't even leave the house when he graduated high school. So he'd spent 2 years, like, he went to community college, but he was still living at my parents' house. And, like, there's definitely a reality where we were trapped. Like, I have memories of feeling like my house was a prison. Sorry. I actually lost my last grandmother 2 weeks ago. So I'm going through a depressive phase, and I'm kind of emotional.
It's all right. Take your time.
Yeah. So, like, to me, my path was kind of, I was lucky. I could make it happen. I could leverage the rules of the, like, reality I was given to my advantage. And I feel like I have that ability in a lot of spaces. Like, I could get into the corporate world, and I could figure out what those rules were supposed to be, and I could conform to them. And at the time, those rules were kind of like bro culture rules of, like, frat boy behavior, and, like, you have to do XYZ in order to succeed, or you have to, like, not, like, things like when you go to an interview, like, we were told as female presenting individuals that you can't have loud jewelry, because somehow that's distracting to the interviewer. And I'm sorry, if you have ADHD and you're distracted by my jewelry, that is not my problem. That's a you problem. Like, that should never have been something where I had to change the way I dressed or how I presented myself or the words I used just because somebody else was going to get triggered by it, because I don't control them. I control me. I control how I present myself. And now when I go into interviews, like, the background of my webcam is my kitchen, and it is a disaster zone. It is not what you would consider, like, oh, like, if you're going to have guests over, there's always a scramble in the house to, like, hide all the junk, clear off all the counters. Your house always had to be absolutely perfect. And I'm like, nah, guys, you're going to see my background. You're going to see that I'm human. Because the other, like, aspect of being Asian that I'm trying to tweak in expectations is that somehow being Asian makes you perfect. and I am not perfect. I am human. And yes, I am amazing at my job. So you're going to get that impression. So when I like leave the mess behind me, it's on purpose to say, hey, so when I do mess up, it's not going to be a surprise because this is the disaster zone back here. And that's where I've like, after like over 10 years of being in corporate, that's the reality I've come to, is if I get into an interview, they know exactly what they're getting because they see what is in my background. I dress the way I want to dress. Like, I'm going to be like not offensive about it, but it's up to them to say yes or no, whether or not that's a fit in their culture. I'm not trying to conform to whatever their culture is.
I think all that you said in terms of, you know, your kind of experience dealing with growing up, you know, with that whole mindset of like, oh, parents' expectation or Asian parent expectations for kids, even though it's not necessarily what you had with your parents, but you're part of that community with that culture that have those expectations that made you feel like I have to do it as well. It's kind of where I feel like, oh, that sucks. That's not the way it should be. Or even if there are expectations, they shouldn't be enforcing it to everyone to be like, you have to do this. And if you don't, you're a failure to your ethnicity. Because that's, I feel, how I would feel if I'm in this position. And I think that's not the way to go. Like, I think it's good that you have expectations, but you need to kind of figure out in terms of your community, how do you kind of go through dealing with those in your community that does not meet your expectation, but still live good lives, be good people? Because I think there's so much of, like, at least in the Asian community, where their expectation for other people outside the community is not as strong, or like their expectation is like, well, they're not part one of us, so that however, yes, it does not matter. But if your people in your community are at a point where they're not meeting the expectation, just by a little bit, they still have a lot to say, which I don't think is fair, and put like too much pressure and just causes a whole lot of like struggle with identity. Like, am I Asian? Or how come I'm not able to fit into the community? But it's not you. It's more like, you did not make those expectations, but that does not make you not a good person in your community. At least that's how I see it. And like, so much of what you have said really like just made me think, wow, like, you were able to think like, those are the things I need to do. I can do it. And you're still doing it. And still not rebel in the more traditional way. That's impressive, because if you have to meet those expectations, you could, but you're still not really truly happy because you know there's something more to it, right? So I applaud you for that. And I see, at least with your content, you try to make people more aware of like, oh, there is that way of living, but that does not mean you have to go through it and meet every expectation if you don't want to. If you want to live that life, you could, but you don't want to be restricted, be like, if I cannot do it, that's the end of my world, or that's just, I'm not Asian enough. I think so much of, like, especially dealing with like language acquisition of your cultural language, how you look, how you act and stuff, if you don't meet a certain thing, then you kind of, some people will just be like, oh, I'm just gonna be American only. But I don't want people to feel like that, because you could be both. It's just, I think everyone needs to believe like, the whole kind of Asian American identity and just everything around it, there's a spectrum, and you could be on any kind of point. I think I want to have it where at least people listening could be hearing like, oh, you could be on a spectrum. It doesn't matter what side you're on. It's really up for your own discovery. If people don't think you're Asian enough, who cares? But I know it's hard to be like, who cares about it? Because it's very real, where they might like prevent you from being part of the community when you want, even though it's like you don't meet a certain criteria for them, and that's messed up.
It is. And I, as you were talking, I had so many flashes of memories of like in high school, the people that fell through the cracks because they didn't meet those expectations, or that were super hard on themselves because they thought they should have naturally been talented enough to be a certain way. And we had this nonprofit group from Stanford is currently called Challenge Success. It's a bit of a tongue twister. At the time, it was called Save Our Students, SOS. And my white friend's mom, like, brought it into our community because she saw what was happening. And she was very aware of, like, the contrast between, like, a white American standard of living or, like, culture and what was happening to us as teenagers. Because as much as, like, we want to be able to, like, have critical thinking and pick for ourselves, when you live in your parents' house, when you're that young and you don't know any better, and you're given a formula of how to be and how to succeed, it's really hard to break through unless somebody gives you other ideas. So we had this event centered around identity. And there was an activity where one side of the wall was supposed to be labels that were positive. And then on the other side of the wall, you were supposed to take a sticky note and put, like, negative labels. We gave everybody who came through that door a sticky note. Over 100 high school students. Every word on that wall, on both sides, said nerd. And that's, like, the challenge of being Asian American is your culture, your family says being a nerd is positive. Like, this is your life's goal, is to do well in school, get a great job, fund your parents' retirement. And then, of course, we don't avoid the messages we get from the rest of America that nerds get put in lockers. And depending on where you sit and, like, how well you're capable of getting through school, like, being a nerd could be an aspirational goal. And it sucks. And, like, unfortunately, in my community, we really didn't have, like, alternative options for people. Like, our football team sucked. Like, even if you were good at sports, you weren't going to get anywhere because the whole team has to be good to get somewhere. So the concept of, like, trying to figure out, like, leaving behind how Asian you are or going back to it is all, like, extremely challenging. And it's an identity crisis that I saw so many of my classmates, like, they went to college. They're living in the dorms. And maybe they did extremely well in high school, right? They were considered, like, one of the powerhouses of academics. They would go to, like, academic decathlon or whatever. But when I see them now on social media, I'm like, oh shit, like, something changed and something dramatic. And sometimes it was like they fell apart, they went to parties all the time, like their version of finding themselves was an unmitigated disaster. And that's just the reality of, like, when you force young children to behave, like, within a set mold, like, when they're free of it, they could go in any direction. Like, of course you want them to go in the positive direction of finding themselves and excelling in maybe an unexpected way. But I would say a good 20% of my classmates just lost it. And most of them have come back and figured it out, right? Like, after, I think we're at 14 years since college for me, or not college, since high school. Right? Like, they find their way back. But, like, that was the great tragedy of my high school culture, was that it was unavoidable. And even for me, when I went to college, like, freshman year was a lot of, like, having being Asian thrown in my face. So even though I've suppressed the concept that I went through an identity crisis, I definitely did.
All that you have said makes me just think of where, like, it's just a sad reality where, like you mentioned, like, the positive and negative. Nerd, it's just amazing where your Asian family or community be like, praise you for being a nerd, but they don't see that in America being a nerd is not as, you know, a great of a connotation or like this identity to pick up on, because you get hurt, you get made fun of, all that stuff. And I think they need to realize that's also like that everywhere in the world. No one really necessarily think being a nerd is a positive, even back in the Asian country. If you talk to people, nerds are not the popular ones. I don't get where's the disconnect with Asian community members, where it's like, yeah, be a nerd, you'll be fine. Or the other aspect is like, you want the kids to be an adult when they're a kid already.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's really been what, at least in my experience, I felt myself where whatever happening at home is where, like, you got to pick up the pieces as well to become an adult, not let emotion take over, to still accomplish the goals that you want to accomplish, or you fail, that kind of thing. So So it makes you grow up faster. But there is a certain point where you grew up, but then you still did not get all the tools that you need, learned, so that you could handle with whatever else that comes up that you have not learned in the books. I think that's very much the issue with Asian American identity, where one is like, you're being told to be one thing that, no, in everyday society, is not looked great upon. Let's be real. No one cares of you being a nerd. Even if, like, all the tech stuff, like, you being a nerd is not that cool of a thing.
Not unless you're also, like, charismatic and sporty. And, like, you can be a nerd that is also all these other, like, amazing things. But if you're just a nerd.
Yeah.
Then, you know.
Yeah, and the other aspect of being an adult earlier than you should be given the opportunity to grow into it. I think right away the expectation, at least with a lot of, at least those that say, oh, I have a tiger mom, is like, they want you to grow up right away at that point so that you could deal with all the stuff in terms of stress, everything. But as a kid, how are you able to really handle stress as like an adult without getting through the journey, right?
It's not physically possible, right? Like, we're still growing, first of all. But I, like, to me, what I observe it being is like, it's the immigrant experience, right? Of like, they somehow freeze their expectations of whatever the homeland culture was. And then they adopt this immigrant mentality that I see in other races of immigrants as well, where in order to succeed in this new country, there's a very specific set of rules that somehow transcends race, that like, you have to do well in school, and like, this is how you succeed. It's the strangest thing. And the expecting you to be an adult thing isn't necessarily like a conscious expectation that our parents have of us. It's a result of them being unfamiliar with the country they've moved to. And as kids, we're immersed in the culture. We pick things up really easily. We're super adaptable to the point where like, you're taking your permission slip to your parents for them to sign, and you're explaining it to them because you've just given them a wall of English text. It's a second language to them. Unless your school is like, I think my elementary school actually did, like, for important flyers, get them translated into Taiwan Mandarin. They're like that. Like, if you've ever tried to go to work in a foreign language and then go home and then try to read something for your kids in a foreign language, like, I'm sure every parent's brain broke. And just that fact meant that we had to be old enough or mature enough to be, if we wanted to go on the fun field trip, to get that thing signed and explain what it was and all those things. So it's something that, like, I wish immigrants, like, or people considering emigrating from their homeland would get, like, a primer of, like, hey, if you're going to raise your kids in a foreign country, here's some things you should expect to experience.
For sure. I think that will be like better than, you know, having them like go through like the citizenship test and all that stuff. Like, no, these are the important things you really should know, not necessarily like all the presidents that are there in order for you to pass. But another point that you raise is just the whole aspect of like that kind of culture, that mentality that really impacts how it ends up for a lot of people as they become an adult, finding their way, figuring out their identity, like you mentioned. And I think a lot of things that they could do would be partying or exploring different country, all that stuff. But the way that I think we want to talk about specifically is through just learning from other people, you know, having this conversation of like going, rerouting how our brain look at things through conversation of like, oh, we used to think and live like this, but is it really a good way? Is it toxic? And I think I get that a lot of that kind of feeling from what you're doing with your podcast, the Asian Deep Podcast. Can you just talk about, of course, what it is, what it's about, what you're trying to do or accomplish from it, and the conversation you have in that?
Yeah, so the Asian Detox Podcast is really me living out loud my, like, my unpicking of all of the things I learned as a kid. And the way I view it is kind of like when I went to college, I kind of freeze-framed my impression of the Asian American community as being super toxic, super competitive, like, you live or die, like, you're going to get disowned if you don't do well in school, like, all of those behaviors to the, like, even like bullying and catfighting and all those things. Like, that was my impression because when I came to Arizona, I really didn't fully connect to an Asian community here. So my version of what an Asian community is scary to me, right? Like, I don't want to be there, right? It's not good for my mental health. But at the same time, especially like having gone through the big wave of Asian hate during the pandemic and feeling like we weren't in the news enough, or I didn't have people to like to talk with that like experienced it the same way I experienced it here in Arizona. And like, in fact, I didn't hear about any of this stuff until my mom texted me one day about like what was happening in the Bay Area. And I was like, wait, what? And I had to go like search on the internet to find out about all the hate crimes. But like, that was a big part of me going, wait, like, there's something missing in my life. And I was scared to try and find that connection. And I was forced to realize how much I had, like, kind of one-dimensionally painted the Asian American community as being toxic. So from there, I was making like concerted efforts to connect with more Asian Americans, right? Like, you kind of wish you didn't have to, that like you could just go through your day and make friends very naturally. But when your culture is such a big part of you, like something that I grew up with, right? Then you do have to make an effort to make sure that you have a safe space to talk about things that are important to you. And that's what the podcast is supposed to be, is that it's a safe space where I bring Asian business owners or Asian experts on, and we talk about just being us. Like, yes, I love that the platform also highlights whatever like their business is or opportunities to work with them. Like, I love having a platform to offer for them. But it's every time I talk to my guests, they tell me that like it's been forever since they got to talk about what it's like to be Asian as a human, as a day-to-day life thing, not about like what it means for their business or in their marketing strategy or like in that very like one-dimensional, like goal-oriented way. What we really want to do is show that we're human and that we're not all toxic assholes.
I love that, because I think through my kind of own journey is like, it's a lot of undoing our stereotypes, our preconceived notion of what it means to be Asian or what is Asian in the context of being in the diaspora. And for you to be like, I'm going to talk about these issues in a way where it allows for other side of things to be highlighted rather than the normal like, oh, tiger moms or like, no, unexpected or like, unreasonable expectation, only studying nerds, all that stuff. I think that's great. And it allows for us to be more multidimensional. I think that's what's missing as well. Cause I think, like you mentioned, like the pre-approved path by Asian parents, like only allow for a certain kind of character arc for Asian Americans. And I think we're more than that. But at least with mainstream media, they still want to just focus on those specific points, which is fine because we are in those positions. We are a part of that, but it doesn't make it as whole, because I don't want to just hear about just Kevin from Facebook, his kind of journey or his kind of story. I want to hear about Janet in terms of her experience owning a food truck and all, whatever it may be, kind of Asian experience. Because I think mainstream media only care about is like, oh, my Asian mom been so tough on me, or like I went through that, or like there's a whole bunch of like, you know, preset kind of things to talk about. And I think, yes, those are valid experience, but that does not represent everyone, because there are Asians that came to the West where their family was coming here not necessarily for a better life. They just got put here and then like they're just working a normal life kind of thing where they don't have to struggle like, oh, owning an old restaurant, or that they're refugees, right? There's so many kind of variety. And I think as we get more representation, hopefully more stories of other Asianness could arise. Saying all of that just made me think of like, oh, talking about like the immigrant mentality and the whole concept of, you know, scarcity, hustle culture, and all that stuff. Because I think so much of the current hustle culture, I think Asian parents dig it. Where it's like, oh, you work to make it. They love it. But as, you know, millennials and as, you know, younger generations coming up, hustle culture, some like it. Some like me, I got to be on the grind. I got to make X amount of figures. But there are also a lot of people that, you know, are against it or trying to, you know, work in a way where it's not like that for them. And I just want to know your thoughts, because you have a lot of thoughts about, you know, hustle culture and how it may or may not be toxic and all that stuff. So can you just talk about that? Because I'm also very interested in this whole concept too.
Yeah, yeah. So the phrase is like scarcity mindset and hustle culture. They kind of make me cringe a little bit. But it's definitely how I grew up, is like my mom was cutting coupons and she would have this big folder of like coupons for all sorts of things. And that's how we would go shopping, and I would help her cut them and all of these things. Or like she would tell me that if I turned on the shower before I stepped into it, that I was like throwing away pennies. And it was very much that the way I view it is, at least in my community, and some people will tell me that like my part of town is the like affluent part of my town in my hometown. And my observation about like our economic status was that the reason a lot of the Asian immigrants were like upper middle class range of income or net worth is actually because they were so frugal. They weren't spending any of it. So, and they had these habits that other people who probably made the same amount of money didn't have. And then therefore they felt like they were in like firmly in the middle class. And that was the difference that kept us on top or at that level, was that we teach our children how to save money, or that like you shouldn't spend on frivolous things. It has to be useful. It has to have a function, which is like an interesting reframe, because I also go back to thing, and this happens a lot, is that like I'll get certain messages from my parents, and then I think about like specific things of like, yeah, but my parents, like, they love going to estate sales and yard sales, and they come home with all the most random junk, or like there's way too many dishes in my parents' house. And I'm like, why do you need this many dishes? So it's like there's a version of being frugal that is actually still not like sustainable or eco-friendly. So it's very important to step back from the concept of like scarcity mindset specifically, and realize that like it's not clear cut how like you're benefiting yourself or the world by penny pitching in some areas and then being wasteful in others. And there's an aspect where like hustle culture feeds the scarcity energy, because if like you look at extreme couponers, that is like some hustle culture energy to coupon so hard that you make like $2 back when you go buy a cart full of groceries. And in America, we very much reward like accomplishing something, being task oriented, always moving. And that's probably the part of being American that Asian parents most support, right? That's the acceptable part of being American, is the hustle culture aspect. They don't like the independence part. They don't like the concept that like you aren't respectful to them. Like they don't want any of that stuff. But they fully underline for you that if you work hard, you'll somehow get to a place where you'll be happy in some form or fashion. And it's extremely tied to money in the immigrant experience, because they want you to be happy in the sense that you're financially stable. And like, I think it's worth like everybody who hasn't had a chance to talk to their parents about it to just ask the question that like, if you were to quit your like super stable job or move out of the house, like what are your parents most worried about? And every time this comes up for my parents, of like, I quit my job without a plan and started my own business, or I moved out of their house, or I bought a new place, like they're like, how are you financially? That's all they care. They don't even, like, they know I started a podcast. They don't listen to podcasts, which is great, because then I can be embarrassing and then I don't get yelled at. But they don't try to understand what it's about or why I'm doing it or any of the details of, like, my business, because all they care is that when they call me and ask me how I'm doing, that I can tell them that I can pay my bills. And I don't think enough of us actually have that conversation with our parents of like, why does this scare you? why are you worried for me? Why are you yelling at me because of XYZ? It's because they don't know how to communicate their emotions, first of all. So it's on us in an American generation that was educated in how to be emotionally intelligent to reach back out and be like, hey, I noticed XYZ. And it might become a fighting, like a yelling match, because that's how it happens in my house. But so much of why we do the scarcity mindset and hustle culture is fear-based. And that's why I don't like it, right? Like when I see other business owners doing what we call bro marketing, where they like make you scared or tell you you're not enough. Like that's making your potential customers feel bad about themselves so that you can take their money. And that doesn't sit right with me. It doesn't make any sense. And it takes a lot for me to like unpick what are very traditional marketing tactics of, I would say like 50% of like what you'll learn in like a marketing degree is going to be bro marketing. And you have to go, oh, scarcity, time sensitive, urgency, like there's like seven features and like three of them are all about making somebody feel bad or like FOMO or whatever it is. And in my journey of building a online-based business, I've met other business owners who are so much more interested in the concept of an abundance mindset of somehow the universe will provide. You as a person are enough. You are worthy. You deserve things. You deserve to take care of yourself. And that you don't have to have everything planned out, because when you need it or when it's fully aligned with you, when you are your fully authentic self and you're going after things that you're passionate about, that you are put on this earth to do, then the universe will support you. And that the client that you need or the job that you're looking for will all fall into place. And it is such a big swing from what I grew up with of like, you have to have a plan, or if you don't have a plan, you got to go ask people how things are done and figure out what the rules are. And sometimes abundance mindset is there are no rules. You just have to have faith. You just have to step out on it. And that's extremely scary. So it's an emotional journey everybody has to like go at their own pace to get to. It's not something where, like, if you were to hear some of the phrases that come with abundance mindset, like I've been there where I was like, oh, that's a lot of bullshit. Like, how dare you tell me XYZ that you're just like, because there's nothing, it doesn't feel substantial. It doesn't feel real. But if you take little things like, I've renamed my emergency fund to my abundance fund. Like it's that simple of like renaming things to make it feel more light and positive. Because first of all, I don't know how I would define an emergency. Like during the pandemic, my biggest emergency was if my grandmother died. Right. And other people have that struggle too, where they feel like they raid their emergency fund for the stupidest things because we never defined emergency. And if you change the label from emergency to abundance, when your car breaks down, when you need a new set of tires, when a hurricane comes through, it's not suddenly that you're like stealing from your nest egg. It's your abundance fund to help you believe it's okay because I planned for this. Or it's okay that like when I'm emotionally distraught, I go on like a shopping spree. Yeah, I have an abundance fund for that. Or if I have a terrible client that I hate, and they're asking for a refund, or hell, they're not even asking for a refund, but I don't want to work with them anymore. Abundance fund. Take whatever they paid me, give it back, bye.
That's such a great kind of mindset shift I think people should consider. And I think this whole episode has just been talking about just rewiring how you think of things and how you look at life. I think that is so important. And I think it allows for, you know, a better understanding of yourself and the ability to live a more meaningful life. I think that's what it gets to. Like, if you can, one, live your most authentic self and also see the world in like a lot of things are there for you, is there. It's not where you don't have it, you're going to miss out. There's only so much time you can get it, then that's great. And I think another point I want to bring back where you mentioned like, oh yeah, your parents only care of if you can pay your bills. I know they're doing that out of the goodness of their heart. They want you to be able to survive and all that stuff. But we're at a point where paying our bills, even if we could, there are other things that will dictate whether or not we feel happy, safe, all those factors, that even if we could pay our bill 10 times over, it doesn't mean we are truly happy. We have so many people be like, I made all this money, but in the end, I still feel empty inside. So I think a lot of people with that mindset are like, as long as you can pay your bills, you're fine, right? Or like, you're making tons of money, then you're fine. They need to shift their mindset and be like, well, money does solve a lot of problems, but it does not solve the ones that money can't solve. And there are a lot of things that money can solve. And I hope Asian parents can realize that before it's too late, where it's like, they only focus on, can you pay your bills? Are you making enough money? Where is your house? Or why are you investing more? All that. Why are you not saving more? All that stuff. Because I think if they could care about the other things, we will feel more they care about us as an individual. Because I think they're focusing on things that are important, but not the most important. I think at the end of the day, for a lot of kids, it's like, yeah, if their parents pay, like, be like, oh, how are you doing in terms of your feelings or your everyday kind of life? I know it's a far stretch and we need to work on it.
I'm laughing because I was just home for a funeral, and like the amount of watching, like my parents are, I would say, more emotionally intelligent than most Asian immigrants, but like the amount of not knowing how to deal, mm-hmm. right? Of like to express your emotions or to have a respectful conversation about them. So they're using money as a proxy. Right? That like it's safe to talk about. So they're going to use that to express their love. And my mom legitimately like equates giving money back and forth in the family to how loved she is. So it's very real to them in that sense. And it's hard for us as kids to like to reconcile what we're told of like what an ideal parent should be. And what we got is basically an adult kid who never learned how to take care of their emotions. So, of course, they're not going to care about yours because they can't even tell you how they feel.
Yeah, that's really tough. And I think by having those conversations, like you mentioned, with like your parents on like those kind of talks will be a step in the right direction to kind of sort of whatever you guys may have in your family that you need to deal with to ensure that everyone can get like the closure or like the kind of like the way to get to a better place and better mindset. And I think so much of what we have talked to today about is just a lot of just reframing our thoughts and perception, along with like communicating what we care about, what means, what matters to us, and living a meaningful life in the way that you want and being your true self. And that is very important. And I think that's this very great thing that you're doing with your podcast, with your online business, of like guiding people through on doing what you are practicing yourself and what you think will work for people and helping them on their journey. And no, I appreciate what you're doing. And I am so happy that I had this conversation with you, because I feel like these kind of conversation, I don't have that often in terms of dealing with like, you know, emotional kind of thing in regards to like abundance or the kind of the being your own authentic self, that kind of thing. I think a lot of times we do talk about it, but not in the way that we do talk about it right now. So I really thank you for that. And I had a really fun time, a reflecting kind of time in terms of all the things that you have said and put forward. So I thank you so much for that. For the audience who wants to know more about you, your story, your experience, what you offer through your podcast, let them know where they can find you. And any parting words you want to provide for the audience before we sign off for today's episode?
Yeah, so if like the best way to know about me is really to listen to the podcast, because I really am that transparent. Like, you're going to get my life story in bits and pieces and even some current events as I sit down to record. So look for the Asian Detox podcast on your favorite podcasting app and go ahead and hit subscribe so you get all the latest episodes. We are on a bit of a hiatus right now, especially like it, it was unplanned that I was hoping to be back with season two. But after my grandmother passed, I just don't have it in me to record the solo episodes to really have the season where I want it to be. So there is a little bit of delay there. But if you're if you've listened through the back catalog of the existing 12 episodes and you're still curious about me, then you can find me on Instagram at tj.way. And you can also follow the podcast at Asian_detdetDetox to find out when we'll be back.
Just look forward to it. It's on its way. It's coming, I'm sure. And when it comes out, it's worth the wait and you'll enjoy it. I'm positive about that. Again, thank you so much for coming on this podcast. I had a lot of fun talking to you and learning about your story and your experience. All the best to you in terms of your life and also, you know, your journey with podcasting and, you know, delivering your message and helping others, because I think it's a very noble thing to do. And again, thank you so much for this talk. And thank you to the listeners for listening to this episode. This is What Kind of Asian Are You podcast. I'm your host. And until next time, bye-bye. Thank you for listening to What Kind of Asian Are You? We hope that our conversations about the diverse experiences and perspectives within the Asian community have been enlightening and thought-provoking. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at What Kind of Asian Pod for updates and behind-the-scenes content. And if you enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating and review on Spotify and Apple. It really helps us reach more listeners who could benefit from these important conversations. If you're feeling generous and want to support the show, you can buy us a coffee through the link in our bio. Every little bit helps us continue to bring you new episodes each and every week. Most importantly, we hope you'll tune in next week for another insightful conversations about being Asian. Until then, take care.